It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In what's being called one of the biggest eureka moments in the history of physics, scientists revealed last week they could confirm the existence of Einstein's final general theory of relativity prediction after reportedly hearing the chirp of two black holes colliding. The noise occurred billions of miles away, but was heard at several stations throughout the United States. Let's listen. The noise is that of a gravitational wave, allowing scientists for the first time to begin to further study black holes. A Fox Chapel High School graduate and Syracuse University senior has been involved in the research. We spoke with Samantha Usman earlier today and asked about her role in the findings.
My name is Samantha Usman. I am a physics and math major at Syracuse University and a long-term undergraduate researcher for the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. I am a graduate of Fox Chapel High School, class of 2012. I grew up my whole life in Fox Chapel Area School District. So last week we announced that we detected our first gravitational wave. The actual detection was back in September, and since then we've been running analyses and double-checking, and last week was when we actually submitted our paper, and it was taken by Physics Review Letters to be published. I've worked on many different areas of research in LIGO, but my main focus has been on improving the program that identifies gravitational waves in the detector data. So the program takes in the data from the detectors, which basically are just a reflection of the length, telling us if there's been a change in the length of the arms of our 4-kilometer laser interferometers. Very complicated stuff. But we receive this data, and then we look for very subtle changes in the data to see if we can detect these gravitational waves. And the way we do this is we look for a pattern that looks like what we would expect a gravitational wave from a binary signal to look like. So, for example, this was the gravitational wave that we detected and we announced last week was from a binary black hole system. And we can figure out on a computer what the gravitational wave from this type of binary would look like. And so we just compare every millisecond of data to what our prediction should look like from a gravitational wave. And then we can see if, and then of course we run statistical tests to see if this is accurate and to see if it's exactly what we expect, if there's any changes, how significant it is. And then we can determine whether or not it's a true gravitational wave. There's a couple of different important things, different steps that were, like, in my opinion, important dates. The first one was, when I first learned that we might have detected something, I was on a conference call and somebody mentioned it was like 2 days after the fact. And someone mentioned that our quick responding pipeline, which generally looks for supernova or the type of gravitational waves that you would want to have astronomers looking for, not black holes, which don't emit any light. The quick responding pipeline program picked something up. And I had assumed that it was probably just statistical noise. I didn't think anything of it. But then I ran the analysis that actually first determined the significance of the gravitational wave. And it was louder than any gravitational wave that we would see in 10,000 years, like just from noise. It was louder than any statistical fluctuation in 10,000 years. So then I knew it was a real gravitational wave, and I was ecstatic. We have to open the box, we say, is the term for it, or look at our results as a group. It has to be a group decision because you can't change anything about your analysis after you've looked at the results, because then you'll be biasing your search. So it was a group decision to open it, and all of my colleagues were with me. And we opened it and found that it was a gravitational wave. And so, of course, I jumped around and giggled like a small child and in front of all of my colleagues. So I was extraordinarily excited. And then, of course, we had to write all these papers, look at what the implications were, and agree, 1,000 people need to agree on the final detection paper, because I believe there's 1,006 authors on it. And so finally we all agreed on the paper and had it published, and that's whenever we had the February announcement. That was an amazing announcement. So many of the people I work with have been working on this for decades, and it's amazing to see. I feel very grateful that I joined the project when I did, so that I could be involved in this great discovery. This is just the first stepping stone. So one of the things that many of the professors and other people involved in LIGO have been saying recently is that this is like Galileo looking through a telescope for the first time, pointing it to the stars for the first time. We're now going to be able to detect all of these different types of gravitational waves from many different types of sources and learn about many different things in the universe. We can detect gravitational waves from supernovae. We can detect them from binary neutron stars. We've proven that black holes exist. They were never observed before. And we can look at gravitational waves from the beginning of the universe, from the inflationary period. We can learn so much about the universe around us from these gravitational waves.
And that was Fox Chapel High School graduate and Syracuse University senior Samantha Usman, who is one of 1,006 authors of the study, part of the team that confirmed the existence of Einstein's final general theory of relativity prediction after reportedly hearing a chirp of two black holes colliding. I'm joined now in studio by Carnegie Mellon University physicist Professor Ira Rothstein. Professor Rothstein, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
What can you tell us about this sound? And let's listen to it again. That's cool. And so tell us about this sound, what it means. Why does it sound that way?
Right. So the first thing to understand is that black holes don't actually emit sound. This is the conversion of the gravity wave signature into sound. So if we could hear gravity waves, that's what it would sound like. So we'll go into what gravity waves are, imagine, in a second.
That was my next question. What are gravity waves or gravitational waves?
Why don't we get through that, and then we'll come back to the first question.
All right.
So if we think about space and time, let's go back to Newton. Newton thought space and time were absolute, that there was one set of clocks and one set of rulers, and everyone shared those rulers. So I like to think about it like actors in a play. They're on a stage. The stage doesn't move. The actors move. The stage is where the play plays out.
It's like the universe.
It plays out. It's like where everything happens, right? But when Einstein came along, what he realized is that the stage isn't really just sitting there, and it actually can move itself. And that is, space and time aren't necessarily these static things. In other words, its clocks can move at different rates at different places, and lengths can change depending on, in particular, the strength of gravity. So, in fact,
so everything is moving.
Well, in some sense, that's actually true. So, as long as if I shake my hand here, I'm moving the mass of my hand. It's changing the gravity around us, and in so do, by an infinitesimal amount, the clocks in the region are changing. The lengths in the regions are changing. Now, those effects are so incredibly minuscule, they couldn't possibly, and we'll get back to this in a little bit actually, have an effect on everyday life. But if you take two massive black holes, 30 times the mass of the sun, and you slam them into each other, they make an eruption in the space-time that is so huge it sends ripples out everywhere. And those ripples eventually hit us.
Is what you're talking about and what we're hearing evidence of, is it the kind of thing that, for example, the Hadron Collider in Europe is designed to simulate?
So the Hadron Collider in Europe is simulating times at the very early times of the birth of the universe, large, very energetic collisions. But the energy released in the black hole in these—
Something different.
It's cosmological. This is a much, much larger energy release, yeah.
So explain then what this discovery means for researchers and how it will impact scientific theories going forward.
Right. So we sort of knew that gravity waves existed. So what made Discovery monumental wasn't so much that we saw the gravity waves. We know gravity waves existed because we've seen indirect evidence for them in the sky. So we've seen them in the fact that there's something called they're binary pulsars, where there are two stars rotating around each other, and we could see them. And as they rotate, they emit gravity waves. And as they emit gravity waves, they lose energy and they start to inspiral, almost like a marble going around a funnel, right? So it starts to go mm-hmm. back in as it loses energy. So we saw the stars move and we saw them spiral in. So we know that the gravity waves had to have taken away the energy. So it wasn't that we saw the existence of gravity waves. So this is the first direct detection of gravity waves. To me, what makes this so monumental and so distinct from other discoveries was we didn't necessarily know we were going to build something. So this project started in 1992, and it was an enormous project. And no one believed that until we got to this final stage of what's called advanced LIGO, we would actually see anything, because the sensitivity is incredible that you need to see the signal. So, for instance, as Samantha said, there are mirrors 4 kilometers apart. And when the gravity wave comes and distorts space, the mirrors move by a fraction of the size of an atom, and that has to be detected. So the detector technology necessary to make this measurement is incredible and took 25, 26 years to do.
Because you had to adjust.
Oh, you had
time.
To account for everything. So if there's a bus driving by the detector, it sets it off. If there's an airplane, it's so incredibly sensitive. So it took 25 years and nothing had been seen.
And these detectors were at MIT and Caltech?
So no, MIT and Caltech are the primary moving institutions. Mm-hmm. But the detectors, one's in Louisiana, one's in Washington.
Okay.
The point I sort of wanted to stress is that it took 25 years of people's work before they even saw anything. I mean, people passed away working on this experiment, never saw it come to fruition. The funding agencies funded this this was an expensive experiment for 25 years with no evidence, but yet people still believed that eventually they would see something. And then when they did, it's just incredible.
Do we need a refresher on Einstein's theory of relativity to fully understand the significance of this discovery?
Well, I think everyone needs a refresher on Einstein's theory of relativity.
Okay. Well, then, do tell.
Oh, do tell. Oh, well, I'm afraid the segment isn't long enough for us to go into that. Certain gravity waves were one of the predictions of Einstein's theory of general relativity. And there's no doubt we have a tremendous amount of evidence, empirical evidence, that it is a correct theory. So while this is sort of the feather on the cap of the theory, I think many, especially theoretical physicists, never really doubted it.
Did Einstein underestimate the know-how of his successors? Because he said scientists would never be able to hear this.
Yeah. It just goes to show you how far we've come in that short amount of time. Technology developed so incredibly rapidly that even someone as imaginative as Einstein had problems conceiving the idea that we could see it.
If you'd like to join our conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call to pose a question or a comment to Carnegie Mellon University physicist Professor Ira Rothstein. 412-246-2002, the number to call. Email esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter @esspgh. Some physicists, Dr. Rothstein, are saying that this finding is as big a deal as the 2012 discovery of the subatomic Higgs boson, known as the God particle. What do you think?
Interesting. I think it's monumental in a different way. So the Higgs boson, we were never really sure it was there. This was a particle which was postulated to be there and mathematically had to be there, or something like it, but there could have been other things aside from the Higgs boson. So when we saw it, we didn't know, for instance, how heavy it would be, what its properties would be. So that was more of a, oh, so that's what it is. But the difference is that we have been building, so the Higgs boson was discovered at this collider in Europe, the Large Hadron Collider, and we've been building colliders for, depending on how you define a collider, but certainly since the 60s, 70s. And we've progressively gone to bigger and bigger colliders. And each time we built a collider, we had success and we found something.
And colliders is atom smashing?
Yeah, essentially protons or electrons, you smash them into each other at really high energies. So we've gone, you know, every 5 years we've built a bigger one. And each time we do, we see something. And the technology for building colliders was slowly built up on these successes. In other words, it's not hard to go to a funding agency and say, we want to build this next collider because look what we did with this previous collider. We found this incredible physics. But when it comes to the gravity wave detector, we couldn't do that. So you had 20 years of no successes, and yet people were still optimistic that we would eventually see something. The science that came out of it on this particular event, I think we all knew black holes existed, and we all knew they would create gravity waves, just to distinguish it from the Higgs boson. Another unique thing about this particular discovery is that, it, as Samantha said, this opens up a new field of physics called gravitational astronomy. So now we have a new window on the world. It's like we've been blind, and all of a sudden there's this new window, and we can see out, and we have no idea what we're going to see out there. I mean, even the fact that we saw two 30 solar mass black holes was a very big surprise, because we didn't expect them to be the primary things that's happening out there. They're not that frequent, at least it was thought. So maybe we need to start rethinking about, you know, how we think black holes are populated in the universe. We'll know. Who knows? I don't know. It's incredibly exciting. Very exciting.
And given how quickly that scientists found their first wave, do they expect to hear more of them?
Yeah. So what's really interesting is that this signal, it's like they flipped the switch and boom, it happened. And, you know, there were various predictions as to how often we should see these signals. More conservative predictions were that we'd see maybe one every 10 years. And more optimistic ones was 100 a year. But they turned the machine on. It wasn't even in its full, it's still not at its highest sensitivity, in fact. And all of a sudden, the thing just goes off. So that was another remarkable, you know, gift of nature. And the rumor is, of course, they're very secretive about it, is that they have more events, and they're analyzing them because they want to make sure it's not a false signal.
So you said something about we might hear 100 of these a year?
Possibly, yeah.
Because I think one of the big questions here is how many, now that we've heard one, so 100 a year, and how will that help us? How will that help people like you?
Right.
I shouldn't say, I'm not going to put myself in there. You are the expert. So
right.
What knowledge will this yield?
So, I mean, in the short term, we'll learn a lot about black holes. So, for instance, one of the things that I think about is most black holes should be spinning, we believe. They should be spinning very fast. And if they spin, they change that chirp sound. So the question is how do we predict how that chirp sound is going to change as we start spinning the holes up? And then we'll be able to tell. If we know that, then we could start counting. How do the holes spin? How many spinning holes are there? Where are they in the sky? What areas of the sky? And as I said, a lot of unknown things, I would imagine, will come up.
We've been talking with Carnegie Mellon University physicist Professor Ira Rothstein about last week's Eureka moment, the reporting of the chirp of two black holes colliding, which you heard earlier. The noise occurred billions of miles away, but was heard at several stations throughout the United States and is indicative of all sorts of future possibilities in this world of research. Dr. Rothstein, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh. We
My
appreciate
pleasure.
It. Coming up, we'll look at the Pittsburgh public market closing at the end of the month, what it means, what happens next on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.